Acorda agora. Então, você acorda na noite, você está com o celular do parlamento, está com a noite.
Can I just confirm, Chair, that we've received no official response from the Secretary of Defence, or from the Minister of Defence, or from the Secretary of Defence, in respect of our request for an open briefing on combat readiness, and in respect of the state of the South African Air Force, particularly the pilot shortage? No.
Yes, as I can confirm that in relation to all the questions that you have raised, that I have asked them to attend to.
Okay.
As the Honourable Member has said, on Friday he had asked quite a number of questions and he was expecting a response, and a document was said was going to be given over to us. He would have received it by yesterday, but I haven't yet received those documents.
Okay. But the only reason we've been given is that the committee cannot receive the briefing because the minister has not received the briefing.
That's what I have on the share. Okay. And the second part is that most of them are in Swaziland. They're only coming back today.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Right. That's how transparent you are, Babundu. Good morning.
Yes, the reason that they are in Swaziland, or the reason that it's not available.
No. The one reason, Babundu, was that we supposed the members of the committee as well, that before we go to the budget vote on Friday, let's have a briefing on the combat readiness, and they wanted to reflect on those issues.
Yes.
And then the issue, I just want to bring Babun Kobo to. And then the first issue was about the confidentiality of the discussion itself, which we said we'll keep on watching whenever such issues come across, or whenever the defense itself explains to us that this issue needs to be kept totally secret and give us the reason, we'll honor that. But then we then expected the minister to have given the mandate for them to come to and brief us either today or yesterday. So the only reason so far we have got that we have gone to Swaziland, and the SEC have then said to us, not in an official letter, but to say that they themselves, have not yet briefed the minister about the combat readiness of their defense. So up until that moment, if she gets the briefing, will we then get the briefing? So that's the state of things at this moment. So today, the committee has asked that it is possible for the sector to just meet with us or to confirm or bring the information that we are looking for before 10 o'clock. Up until now, I have not received anything from him because he is not in town. Is outside the country, is in Swaziland.
Thank
you, sir. So that's the briefing that I was really trying to clear before we got into. And then there were quite a number of questions that were asked by about the Air Force itself, the skills and its own readiness. That it has been getting a lot of coverage throughout there. So members have raised those questions, and then they were promised by the Lieutenant General, that they would get that information being given to them. Up until now, we have not yet received that information.
Thanks.
So we are patiently waiting. So if they get criticized or lambasted, from our side as Parliament, we are trying to do an effort of finding a working relationship between ourselves and the Ministry and the sector. So it's hard luck. I can't change.
Okay.
The President has promised me and everybody that we must monitor ministers. He didn't say to me it must be done by the ANC or the PA. He said members of Parliament must monitor ministers. And I think members of Parliament are trying to keep up to that responsibility themselves across party interests. And I've got no other way than to report the facts that I have in front of me.
Thank you.
Okay. But majorly today we are dealing with the report that we have already circulated to different parties and different people, so that the report itself would be the one that would call for adoption later today, so that it can go over and be recorded as the one that has been done by this parliamentary committee before the budget vote. what do I want to do? Today I was waiting for different members to give me the recommendations and some of the issues that they have in relation to the school report itself. Any member can advise, I'll give you the opportunity.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to start the issue for the two veterans. I know that we do have an observation.
The only thing I'm going to appeal to members, because you are talking and others have to write, don't go faster. Give them the opportunity to also capture your views.
Okay. The observation I generally agree with, although I was somewhat surprised when we heard from the Secretary of Defense that we eventually got from him this explanation that we had, that a task team had been set up. But there was no timeline. And I think if we want to get to grips with this issue, we have to do what we can to enforce a timeline on when the task team must report back to us. And I'd like to see that in a recommendation. My suggestion is that we say, give them, I don't know, 60 days perhaps, at which time we'd like this task team to report, give us a full briefing on, first of all, or so a number of issues which include whether or not the process of deciding who is and isn't a military veteran needs to be expanded and reopened. I know that there are various groups that have been excluded from the process so far. So we need to know some more information about whether or not those people should be included. I'd like to know an estimate of how many people we're going to be dealing with. I'd also like to know how, what sort of support that we're expected to give to veterans. Is it housing? Is it medical care? Is it pensions? What so we can arrive at a sort of a general budgeted figure. And then lastly, I'd like to know what sort of administrative structure should be set up to deal with them, because it seems by the change in this ministry that we may have superseded the Military Veterans Act, which makes provision for a structure. Whether or not that structure is not working or inadequate, I don't know. But this new structure seems to supersede that.
So you are more concerned about the task team?
I think that's the initial step. I think we need to have a timeline. Otherwise, this thing could stretch on forever. Yeah. And until we know that basic information, which I think we should get from the task team, we can't really talk on the issues.
Do you think we should direct it to the task team, or should we direct it to the
minister? I think we should direct it to the minister.
I think so. Let's put that question solely in the responsibility in the office of the minister, because she's the political head. And as parliament, our responsibility is to get from the political head what is their own understanding and what are the time frames. So let's put it solely in the hands of the minister. She will have to define it from there on. Okay, come ahead.
If I could also follow up on your question on the issues in the 77. I'm not sure whether the portfolio quality is better placed to suggest on the kind of structure that needs to be established. Because if you look at the Minister of Veterans Act, it has got many reforms. It's an act in my view that we used to be given. No, I was saying that just as a follow-up to the issue on military veterans and the timeline, I think one of the things that needs to happen, I'm not sure whether we'd be able to suggest the tender for that transition. That's the first point. But secondly, whether we should not, as a subcommittee, as a portfolio committee, not look at possible loopholes or inadequacies of the act itself, because it's flawed in a sense. Shouldn't this popular committee be reviewing or just going through it so that you can be able to determine whether it really would meet the objectives of the establishment of a military veterans division within the ministry? But the other thing as well is who should assume the responsibility in ensuring that this actually does come about? Because in the past, it has been relegated to the deputy minister, and nothing actually happened. I would put it to the committee that maybe we need to be if we can be prescriptive to say that it really needs to be the responsibility, an undelegated responsibility of the minister, so that she doesn't delegate it to the deputy minister, who will not have the kind of powers that are vested in the minister.
My job is to chair, in fact, I've got opinion. Let me go. Even the other members of the board have hand. Can I give a statement later?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. On military veterans, I've got 3 points. Well, I don't know under what jurisdiction do they fall, whether directly to the minister or is it related to what the last speaker has just alluded to, the review of the Act. No, let me just raise them, Honorable Chair, then you'll decide. I think there's some exclusion here in terms of the benefits that the veterans should be entitled to. Mostly we talk about houses, sometimes about money. But there is a critical area that I haven't had being mentioned, and that is education. We'll call it university exemption or tertiary assessment. We all know that people like Harold Macmillan didn't go far at school, but he participated in the Second World War, and after the war was exempted, and he continued his studies at Cambridge University. Closer home, we had people like Joe Slovo, who was standard 5. He went to war, and upon his return, he was exempted by that university, and he proceeded with law studies. Now, I think veterans of the liberation movement too should be assessed and if need be exempted at tertiary institution, because they spend a lot of time accumulating knowledge that was not certificated, but knowledge that was valuable, and there is a value to the knowledge that they had accumulated, be it on Robben Island, underground, or in exile. So I think we should do away with this exclusion from education. And more than houses, more than financial assistance, more than any other thing, I think education will empower military veterans better and even greater than any other area you can think of. Another concern is age exclusion, because I don't think we should fool ourselves. Old people, I know that they participated in the struggle, but about 60% of participants, especially in the Liberation Armies, averaged 18 years. Now, a person who was 18 in 1990, when the liberation movements were unbanned. In 1996, when the Act came into place, was 26, and that person is excluded even by the amendment to that Act. So a lot of participants, a lot of freedom fighters are still excluded, even if age has been lowered. I think we should do something about that. Lastly, is exclusion from history. We all agree that we have had the liberation struggle in this country. But where is liberation legacy? Where are the museums? Where are the sites? Prepared sites or battles. And where is MK High Command, you know, photo galleries, etc. So I think really we should not dismantle the legacy of liberation struggle or even those veterans, because yes, I agree, liberation armies were disbanded, but I don't think their disbanding should equal the disbanding of the legacy that they have left to this country. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, I'm coming to you. But what I also want members to do, I don't want you to lose sight of also the questions that have been raised by the two honorable members. I want you to respond to that question. But you then talked of defining a role for Parliament in the establishment of this particular division, military veterans. Your report yesterday said on 1.6 that the details of most appropriate institutional design and associated costs relating to the military veterans are not yet known. That's what the report is saying, which is a fact now. Now, there are new suggestions that are coming up, that the one part members must clearly say that what do we do? Rather than, if you would have cleared this air with the ministry, if the ministry had come over, you see, that do we want to get into the Military Veterans Act and review it so that we could be able to incorporate some even of the issues that they are beginning to raise? Is that the route the ministry wants to follow? Or is it what Parliament would be satisfied about, that there is a starting point to beginning engaging? So that is the challenge. That is something that we must clear in our own minds here. It is what we want to do, and it is what I under the honorable member, is raising now. The second part of that question, the major part is, do we open up, do we accept the fact that it has to go to a director, to the minister, to the deputy minister, and then the deputy minister sitting on a directorate, and it's just how would one to run it, or given the substantial issues now that they are raising, that has to be done. Is it correctly placed then in the minister, where the minister herself gets actively involved and given direction, rather than it be given over delegated to the deputy minister? Now that is left with you to decide, so that when we put it into the recommendations here, we put what, because you are working on recommendations today as a report that we are all agreeing upon, that what this is what we are to do. So I would just want members, as they go on, they must clarify those issues, and my secretary would then be able to take notes and know that this is a decision that Parliament has arrived at. Yeah, I've got that to Kololo.
Thank you very much, Chair. Actually, I also wanted to make a comment about this military veteran. I don't know if we are aware of the opportunity or a law that says at least we must give those people who are in high office, like your ministers, your president, at least a period of 100 days to perform something, so that after that maybe action could be taken from there. So that my question here was, I'm also concerned about the time frame. I feel that we need to afford the minister, not the deputy minister, the opportunity of ensuring that this task team completes its responsibility within that period, maybe, of 100 days, that the minister himself is the one who is going to be in charge. herself, she has to ensure that that task team, by that time, within that 100 days, I don't know if it's too much, but at least within that time, a report should come to us, because we here at the portfolio committee are the ones who are supposed to make sure that that establishment of that unit is done. Thank you very much.
One of the the minister 100 trees. No, no, I'm not questioning. I'm just saying you are parliamentarian. You must understand the pressure you are under. It was in one meeting which I attended, somebody was just bringing up all that during the campaigns, this is what you have met with some people on the ground, and this is what they're getting. They're raising questions about it. So it's fine. I hear what other members are saying. But also the president, you see, we must not remember, he speaks on behalf of the country. And when he says, you must monitor and make sure that things are being done by different ministers, he said there's no tension, there's no infighting about that. There's work that has to be done. And I'm just taking that members feel that work has to be done. The one part that must not put parliament into is to end up not doing your work as parliamentarians. Because what he is saying, Lorimer, is that the Honorable there, the sector himself made his commitments last week. He spoke about the task team. He said different things. Now, the question is, until when, who do we wait, you see? Because he is the sector who is now the accounting officer, shown commitment to us that this is how we're starting this. After the president himself has spoken about it and appointed the minister to oversee defense and military veterans. Now, I understand the predicament. All of us are in the same predicament. Like, what do we do at this particular moment? Because if we don't put our foot down, we'll end up not having anything done for the military veterans. And the reality is, this problem has been coming on for a very long time in the country. It's not that nobody doesn't know about it. It's how you design now and cause the infrastructure that has to monitor this particular responsibility. And as Honorable Ayana says, let it rest with the minister, which you are agreeing now, let it rest with the minister. That's the first part that we've got in as an agreement now, that the minister must be the one that is being responsible for this development. Now you are saying that let's give him more time to think. Now I'll leave that to the committee to think about that. Let's go to Honorable Lorimer.
Mr. Chair, I think we should be, 2 points. First of all, I think we should be quite strict, or strict as we can be on timelines. I think that the minister, look, even if you do say the 100 days grace period, she's already had considerable time to think about these things. If we gave a deadline, and my suggestion was 60 days, that is really doable. And the other thing I think is that we, whereas my honourable colleague has brought up many of the issues that need to be discussed during the course of this process, I'm more concerned about at the moment the actual process itself. Where does it go? Does it mean that we have to rewrite this Military Veterans Act, which would seem to me to be the implication? In which case, what do we do as a committee to kickstart that?
I want the committee to decide about that matter, and we then just follow the normal procedures of checking up with the legal teams in Parliament. But what do we do now? Is it possible? That's the reality we are confronted with, that, but that document is in the arms of Parliament. It's our document, it's us who write policy at the end of the day. So let's put it there, but we will consult the ministry, we'll consult our own legal team in Parliament that the Military Veterans Act would have to go into it for a reviewer as a committee. That will be the word that would use, that we want to review the Military Veterans Act, given the type of development and the type of issues that members are beginning to be concerned about. But that document is a parliamentary document. It's an act that it's been done, that has been done in the past by ourselves as members of parliament. Maybe we should just take note of investigating what we do. Yeah. Maybe we'll look into that.
No,
sir,
it's in the legal advisor to look into that.
Okay, that's fine. Oh, you are not a lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that you are a lawyer, man, Maggie, but you see.
Okay. I can
talk at my okay, fine. We'll put it in as one of the points that you have to reflect on. That is here. I am coming to you and I'll talk to you.
Honorable Chairperson, I'm covered. But I want to emphasize the point, the fact that the military veterans, as other members have said, particularly, Honorable Ian, placed under the minister. Honourable Chair, putting under minister, it means it will be speed up. You know, I think I've been with this committee for some time. We discussed this question for a long time. You know, sometimes you were not there, sometimes you were there. We discussed it for a long time. Now, if for instance, doesn't this question, this matter doesn't speed up, it means we are dishonoring our military veterans. So this is the 20 years now, establishment of the new, I mean, democracy in South Africa. We are still grappling with this matter. We should have finalized a long time. So if, therefore, it's under the minister will be able to speed up, rather than under the deputy minister. From the deputy minister to the minister, from the minister to the president. It is a long way. We are dishonoring our people. Yes. So I'm with the members who are saying that. Under the minister. Thank you very much. For how many days? Well, I don't know. But under the minister. We've been talking about this for a long time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I support much of what has been said about military veterans. My point is much broader than military veterans. Chair, would you like to close the subject of military veterans and then have come back to me?
Yes. I just wanted us to arrive at, he has made the recommendation. I just wanted to see how much support is the conference recommendation. So that topic has been quite.
But with your permission, can I go back to my BlackBerry?
Babundoof, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, I must apologize that there are so many things that are happening. I totally agree with the Honourable Member Mpashela about the issues that he has raised to be put in the And secondly, I think because the bill is in our hands, that is us to look at it and upgrade it and degrade it and see how far we can take it. It's our hands that we must do it. Not the executive, but it's us. Therefore, we must look at that. The legal system, the legal side must section must come here and brief us about it so that we are able to beef it up the way Mr. Pachela was saying. But I want to come back to the timeline. The timeline of 6000. If you want an action and to be done correctly, don't go very far, don't go to 100, but don't be short again to say that they want it yesterday, because you won't get the product that you are looking for. Therefore, I think we must compromise to 90 days, because that will give them a leeway of saying, we are giving you this time, and we can't go on no more. As David Yale is saying, we have been discussing this thing for 15 years, and we haven't come up to the really solution on this matter. And we must be able to say, this is the final thing. After 90 days, if nothing happens, let's come back to us for a recommendation of what we want to do. Therefore, we must have a fallback of saying exactly what we're taking forward. Thank you very much.
I understood Member Lorna to be saying that the 60 days is not necessarily about the establishment or the determination of what it is that which we're talking about needs to be. There's many things that need to be done before you actually get to that point. The timelines, in my understanding, was that we need to determine how this, whatever it is that we're trying to do here, needs to appear. It's about process more than the end product. The end product could be the 100 days, but in the 60 days, there's lots of things that need to be done for us to really come to a determination as to whether or not this is a department or is it a directorate or what it is. In that 60 days, we would have to look at the review. He raised the issue, how many people are we talking about? We don't even know, which means that we would need to go to the various associations. The department needs to go back to the various associations to do an audit again of membership. Look at the CPR. If there were people that were left out, we go through a proper legal process to determine how many people actually are there. She spoke about the kind of support that is required. Now, it could be educational. Having been a military person myself, the most important thing for me as a veteran is for me to be able to salute the flag. I can't do that as it stands. So there are many things that you could look at, and she raised the issue to say, what sort of support is required? What would need to happen so that military veterans get the kind of recognition that they require? She spoke about the administrative structure, she spoke about who should be included, who should be excluded. And again, it's not about your CMVO or the associations that are currently there. There are people that have been excluded. Your Cape Coloured Corps, for instance, they are excluded. Your former Kufut and all sorts of other people. Whether we are happy to bring them on board or not is another matter. But fact of the matter is that these people were part of the war situation. They are military veterans. It doesn't matter which side they were on. So, you know, speaking as a soldier myself, I would understand who it is that would need to come in, but the committee itself needs to apply its mandate on this issue.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe I should just make a clarification on my 100 days. In that, what I was trying to say with the 100 days, I was saying since the appointment of the minister, when was she appointed?
May.
So the 100 days covers from May up to the 100 days. Yes. I just wanted to make that clarity. Not that from now it should be 100 days. Thank you very much.
I think Honorable Ayane has clarified what is expected of immediate. And within that immediate, it does bring the act in the way you are saying, Babun Gubu. Mm-hmm. Let's have a look at it. It means, you know, our next step is to call people in Parliament together and act here, the legal arrangement, and talk to us about that so that. You know that I was saying to Mwango, you know, when we went into elections, he had that big problem that we were sitting with KwaZulu-Natal there.
Yes.
As Ayanda says, whatever side you are seated on this matter, Parliament has got a responsibility to find the solution. If those people do flip and they are part of this particular criteria that has been decided, we'll have to really look into that. So that's an opportunity that we're providing for ourselves here. The shortcoming was really coming from the department itself in how it has put itself that they said they wanted to create a task team, and then there was no clear mandate of that particular task team. That's why they said at the portfolio committee level. So the concerns of members derive from that, here was a task team pronounced or announced, but nothing was said. What is its own mandate? Now, members of Parliament have been trying to also get the minister to come to the table, to come and explain some of these things so that when you go to the budget vote, they know exactly what it means. So they are in that tight corner. That's why now they're beginning to give time frame so that they can be able to resolve some of these issues quite at an early stage. If you close it at that level, that is all the issues that have been raised will be captured in our report that we're putting in front of Parliament. And that's how our process, we are initiating. Our process is going to be through. We are finishing on your point now. Lorima, are you happy? Okay, that's fine. Let's go back to the BlackBerry. Oh, you've got another point.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think to be systematic, what if we take this report page by page? That is, if we have got no issue to raise on page 1, we go to page 2, so that it's good that Honorable Member came up with a military veteran, but now are we going to address this report haphazardly or what? So this is my suggestion. Thank you.
Your suggestion is still okay. We have not kicked it out. But you see, I was just allowing members because we were given the opportunity yesterday to go and prepare for the report. And then before we adopt it, we'll go page by page to see if there's anything that is left out. But I just wanted members to throw out issues that they have come across themselves. You see, some of the issues sit on top of hearts of other people, you see. Lorima didn't sleep the whole night. He was thinking about the veteran. So I wanted him to keep out. So I want to put the same to the gentleman here. Go ahead, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to make my comment in three rough sections. I mean, the first is, in respect of the old report, I had a number of technical problems, and I think in your second draft, most of them have been dealt with, save for perhaps one. And maybe what I'll do is I'll just check the new draft, and if I do have any typos, I'll come back to you. I don't think we need to waste the committee time with that. But I do have a problem just with your formulation on page 9 of the old draft, where we refer to the idleness of SANDF members. I wonder if we could just, the point that you make in the paragraph is absolutely 4.6 in the old draft. The point that you make in that paragraph is absolutely correct, and I support it. But it does suggest that members of the SANDF are lazy. What we're really trying to convey is they're possibly underutilized or not utilized. The second part of my comments would really perhaps underutilized or any other suitable synonym. Chair, then the second part of my comments would be really to focus on the committee observations. And I'm a little concerned about the ordering of the paragraphs, because I think that they could easily be read as a list of almost priorities of the committees. And while the document does, in the first 4.2 onwards, deal with military veterans, I think it underemphasizes the sort of very grave readiness question, which comes in 4.8. My suggestion to maybe get around that issue would be that we divide the committee's observations into four sections, one starting with military veterans, perhaps then moving to defense, where we could just deal with program 1 to 8 as it's set out in the budget vote and in the strategic business plan. I think then we should have a section on the arms industry and arms control, and then perhaps a general section where we could cover issues such as the failure of the chief of the SANDF, and the general staff to appear before the committee. That would just be a suggestion of getting around that issue. Then, of more concern is, I think that there were issues raised and discussed in our committee which have perhaps slipped through the cracks. And I would suggest that, most importantly, we've talked at great length about what I refer to as a defense policy void. But it's mentioned in many of our legacy documents, the fact that there's a defense update, there's an Army 2025, there seem to be multiple documents being pushed around the Secretariat of Defense. And so that defense policy, I think, is something we need to look at in our committee observation. I also think an issue that we need to add to our committee observation is and it's been referred to in the committee and in some of the documents, and that is the state of the reserve. The fact is, because we have not received our readiness briefings, I'm not really sure what the state of the reserves are, but it's certainly, if one reads the tea leaves, they seem to be in poor shape, and particularly dealing with rural security. Also, the issue of borderline security, I think, should be a specific point in the document. I mean, the President made the welcome statement that we would be setting up a border management agency, but there's confusion if one listens to the Secretary of Defense and if one looks at the strategic business plan, what is the SANDF's role now in respect to borderline security? We do need clarity on that, and we need to carry that perhaps through to our recommendations. Another issue that needs to go, I think, in the committee observation is the question of the NCACC. It has come up. The fact that reports that ought to be published in terms of legislation, particularly the annual reports, are just not published. I understand that the last report was in, I think, 2007, and it was a report on exports in the years 2004 or 2005. I feel very strongly about that. And then there's also the question of come up, and again, we can't get to the heart of this because we have not had the combat readiness briefing, but certainly if one again reads the tea leaves in the document, it seems that there's a severe case of, particularly where the army is concerned and where peacekeeping operations are concerned, severe case of military overstretch. That has been discussed, and I think we should consider including that in our committee's observations. When it comes to recommendations, I think we've pretty much covered military veterans, but I do think I would really propose that we consider three, insisting with clear timelines on three big briefings. One is on the military veterans, which we've talked about, the 60-90 days. The other is the state of readiness of the Defence Force. And then we need to cover defence policy, we need to cover the state of the reserves and all the issues that we've talked about over the last few weeks. And then finally, I think we need a big briefing again with a timeline on the state of the arms industry and arms control. The arms industry and arms control. And Chair, the risk of driving you absolutely mad, I'd emphasize that those briefings should be open briefings. Thank you, Chair.
In the briefing that we had with the defense team, I had raised the question, and unfortunately I had to leave and I didn't hear the answer. A question with regards to the role of the defense force in the protection of private assets. And I think we need to go back to the constitution on this issue, on this matter, because the employment of the defense force is the sole prerogative of the president. And we should, I don't know what role we would have. Honorable members would forgive me, I'm new in parliament, so I'm not well versed in the processes. But I'll just raise issues that it is the president's prerogative to do that. The ministers, therefore, need to make sure that certain pronouncements are not made that make people jittery. The employment of soldiers, for instance, to assist in matters of policing, that can never be a pronouncement that would be made by the Minister of Police if Parliament has not been briefed. Because even the President would have to come to Parliament to brief us if he's going to employ the Defence Force in matters of policing or any other matters for that matter. The other issue is on the establishment of the border management agency. Again, there we would need to look at security from a holistic point of view. That really, if we scrutinize issues, where should this border management agency fall under? I know that there are discussions within cabinet security cluster on the matter, but I think we should have a voice in that as well. Because the protection of the borderline is the responsibility of defense. Internally, it is both state security and the police to a certain extent. There's also the role of customs and SARS. How do we delineate responsibilities here so that we do not find a situation where things fall between the cracks because Parliament has not applied its mind to the issue of the BMA and provided guidance and assistance to the executive insofar as the implementation or the setting up of this BMA is concerned. On the reserve force, I've tried to join the reserve force. It's a nightmare. For anybody who wants to go there, it is a serious, serious nightmare. And I think, again, as we're looking at military veterans, we need to apply the same kind of concern in dealing with issues of the reserve force. But as we also do an audit on what we have in terms of skills and all sorts of things and qualifications in the military veterans, I think we have to do the same as well with the reserve force. Because out of that, we can then be able to assist, the defense force in a sense can be able to assist the state in, I don't know what FGISA or GIPSA did and whether they were effective or not, but that skilled component that she designed amongst military veterans, and not just the liberation forces, in CMVO, where you find SEPAs who could be able to assist, for instance, in disaster management issues. So it's not just with the military veterans, but also with the reserve force that we need to really do an audit on what it is that we have and find a way of attracting and recruiting people. Because, again, sending currently full-time employees or full-time soldiers who are part of the defense establishment, in many other countries, it's the reserve force that goes to war. In Iraq, you will not, it's not like your conventional force that goes to war. It is your reserve force. So again, I think here as well, when we employ the defense force, we need to look at the reserve force when we send people out on these peacekeeping missions.
The only thing that you must help us then is how you place it. Is it what it is part of recommendation, and both you and your colleague would have to come across that time line. Just work amongst yourselves as you're seated at what time frame they were talking about. And I'm just thinking all the recommendations that we're making.
No,
oh. Yeah, raising the same issues.
I don't have a problem with
it. Yeah. No, I want you to fill them in so that when they get into recommendations, they also carry along some time frames. So that it doesn't just become empty.
I just forgot on my list of things here. Danelle. Where do we place Danelle? Do we think as a committee that Danelle is fine where it is under public enterprise, or should it be part of the defense?
AMCO
is part of defense, but we should look at Danelle.
That's all that comes out of the state and arms industry. We would all have to debate that thing exactly with some of the questions you're beginning to raise. That the empire.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. And I must thank Honorable Member for his scrupulous reading of this document, especially on page 9, 4.6, idleness. Well, if we say underutilized, it is still okay, but I think we should forego or get rid of in the absence of any external threat. Because it gives, you know, some bad connotations that we need external threat for our forces to be fully utilized. I don't think we should even wish for it. I think if we can take this one out. And on this question of Defense Force state of readiness, I can see that you are eager for it. As a stopgap measure, I recommend that you read Africa Confidential. The last time I read Africa Confidential in Southern Africa, the rating in terms of state of readiness, Zimbabwean forces were number one. Number two was Botswana Armed Forces. I think South Africa was the last but one. That is from Africa Confidential. In principle, really, I think this committee should know the state of readiness of our defense force. I must support that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to answer to the question by Honorable Minister about ETNL, that ETNL is 100% state-owned. And from what I know is that it reports under the Department of Public Enterprise. But at the same time, it's with this department, this portfolio actually. They report into both portfolios, that is the defense and the public enterprise. I just wanted to clarify that one. But I don't know whether this committee should take it holistically to say it's going to report under this portfolio or what.
Don't be lazy, Honorable. It's your responsibility to answer that question. You must now work on it. What I am saying, she's got a suspicion that it must come to defense. Now you must engage into politics of that. Is it correct or not? And it's on the agenda now. We are going to go into that debate at some stage. Okay. As we're dealing with the arms industry, we have to talk, look into that particular development. That do we leave the net where it is, or do we ask it to come in another direction? Okay. It's always nice in government. We keep on contesting. Yeah. That will look.
No, Chair, I wanted to ask Lorema, what does he mean when you say outstretch of military? What is that? Outstretching military, what's that? Because I wanted to understand that, what does it mean by that? Because I wanted to get the grips of what he's talking about, if outstretching the military. What does it mean? Well, again, let me debate the matter now.
Yes.
You see, you cannot say the NEL is reporting in Dawu offices, because immediately by saying that, you're saying that it's good or bad. But we have to make sure that it's 100% good. By saying that, therefore you must have it on your home to say that you are looking at it in a mirror like this. Because if there is any way where you say, this is not my baby, it's public enterprise baby, then you would be lacking of coming up with a resolution of whatever you want to do with it and so on. I know that Chairperson, we've debated this matter before, and we had a problem of really not understanding each other, and then being public enterprise thought that we didn't want to evict them with the general and so on. But it seems as if general really, what his work is, it's based on the defense, nothing else. It's only just the head that is reporting on the public enterprise. That's our problem. The policy and everything, the customer of the NEL, it's defense. Therefore, you cannot have a customer somewhere else and then the manager somewhere else. That's my problem. That's where we have to come to the decision of it at the end of the day. 100% of it.
No. We definitely go into it, and we also, like as you normal, get Parliament legal advice, so that you could be able to know exactly what do we do in relation to this matter. But also, you see, we need to agree that this is fourth Parliament, and there's been such a lot of development, and certain areas are beginning to fall into the crack. If you want to keep everybody accountable, we need to know where are you in this fourth Parliament. You see, I mean, we have got views about what happened in the third Parliament. But what has happened with this fourth Parliament has been such a lot of creation that they themselves would then impose upon us that we need to relook at some of the things that we used to do in the past, that are they suitable here or are they suitable there. So DNL is going to become that part of a discussion that does between ourselves and public enterprise. Don't you think, give it over to us? Because we are also now going to be capacitating landward. Now, you can't, as you are saying, you can't capacitate a baby that is seated somewhere else and demand certain resources from it. Mm-hmm. They better be here so that you could be able to see how they assist us into rebuilding the army itself. So that's the type of discussion we are going to go into when the time arrives. But today, what we are really doing is putting recommendation into the report that is in front of us that we are going to reflect on and then engaging from now on. I've been hearing your voice on these issues. What's wrong with you today? Are you rebelling because it's your cousin?
I'm waiting for my chance.
Yeah. I wanted to give you a chance.
Do you want to start with Chico? Chair, it was in fact me that raised the question of overstretch. I'm sure the honourable members agree.
No.
I'll hand over to the real chair.
Yeah. You think, well, I am suspicious. Give it over to you.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things that makes me uneasy about this entire vote is I don't feel I know what I'm voting for, because we haven't had that force preparedness briefing. And this is where the issue of peacekeeping overstretch comes in. One hears things on the ground. There are certain facts which we know. For example, the international best practice in forced rotation is to have 1 to 6. In other words, you spend one period as part of a peacekeeping mission, and then 6 periods in training, on leave, whatever, back home. The official defense force, our official defense force rotation period is apparently 1 to 3. I'm told by people, though, that is not being achieved. And in some cases, it's almost 1-to-1. So you can imagine people are spending 6 months in Burundi, say, back for 6 months, and then another 6 months overseas. That cannot be maintained indefinitely. You can imagine the effects on military personnel there. Second point there is our material is clearly not up to the job. I do know that our state of serviceability of transport vehicles at the moment on peacekeeping missions is only 50 to 60%. In other words, only half of our vehicles are working. And that comes from a senior member of the Defense Force who just revealed this at a peacekeeping conference in Johannesburg. That indicates to me that there might well be a problem with overstretch. We're doing too much peacekeeping. I don't know if there's a specific recommendation that we can make at this point, but I would like it included in our observations as something that we would like to look at, because I believe that we are overstretched in this respect. So that's where it comes from.
You see, the point it was captured properly by your colleague when he said that the policy void. You know, when we came in 1994, and as we were progressing, monitoring the defense, then this particular development took place. But policy has never been worked out extensively by this institution or by the defense. It's kept where it was being promised that it will ever come to us. So there is a gap. So it then becomes like the generals and everybody then decides and foreign affairs interact into making this type of deployment. That's why there's such a lot of weaknesses in that particular development. And you are correct, let's put it on as an observation. But until the stage we get a proper report of what is the state of things, you see. But it does be default between the two areas, that there is a policy void that doesn't guide the whole SANDF and how to act on this particular matter. And the numbers themselves, remember Babungo, we had lower numbers, but for some time, they are now around 3,000 numbers of people deployed, and we seem not to have our grip on that particular issue. So to have this fourth parliament, we have to deal with that policy void quite aggressively so that it could help us to have a better capacity of monitoring that particular. And, you know, without even for you to know, one of the areas that has always been the areas of concern is even their own food ratio. You know, sometimes we would end up with the tender debate that how does those tenders run and all those issues. Those become part of the problem, you see. And sometimes, because there's no proper monitoring, then you hear that this particular armory has been sent, but it disappears, and nobody ends up knowing where it is disappearing to. So there is such a lot of things that have happened in relation to this matter. That's why we need not to take our eyes off, you see. And I appreciate the approach you are taking to say, once you want to have the military veteran also look into the defense, don't make sure that you overemphasize the other one at the expense of the other one. Both areas need our own attention. Yes.
Okay.
That's where we are. Honorable Dodo, you know she's also helping the president where she's located. If she does have really a point, we'll give her for the last time. She has to leave now. You're fine. Okay, thanks. We'll meet you in the debate. Yeah. I hope you are quite ready for the debate. Yeah. You are, ne? Okay, that's good. Now I can hear from how you are articulating. You are quite ready, man. Thanks for your coming today. And have a good morning. Yes, finally.
And
Senator? Am I taking that you have made all your good points and take your recommendations that you would relook at the document and some of the points that you have made, you just submit it to the lady here, Mandy, so that it could be improved and all the different points. Well, I don't hear anybody objecting to the issues that you have raised. So you could just find a way of improving our document and put it to it. Are you steadfast on us going page by page, or do you think we've covered everything that is your concern and everybody's concern?
No, sir. I think if everybody is satisfied that we've exhausted everything that needed to be attended to, I'm comfortable with that. Except that on page 3, 2.4.
Before you come to page 3, I'm sorry, sir. If you come to page 2, under justice crime prevention strategy. I do understand the second paragraph. The SAA presence on borders will continue, although blah, 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 blah. What does that mean, Chairperson? Because I'm asking that question now in cooperation with the police. Because you recall that last time when we talked about there was a very big problem from the police side, and the police on the other side has a problem, and the other side, this is paragraph. Now, I want you to correlate that. You see, so I'm coming from the police side.
Yes.
If you say like this, what does it mean to them, or what does it mean to these two departments? I hope you understand me.
No, we understand. Okay.
Okay. You want to say something?
This is essentially the point that I made. I mean, about including the issue of borderline security in our observations. I mean, there's clearly confusion in the military and presumably in the police about exactly what the new government's policy is on borderline security. And I think we should include that in our observations.
In fact, the police chairperson through you. They have already come out clear that they don't have human resource. They don't have capacity. They don't have most of the things that we want them to do. They don't have it. That is why I'm reading this thing in a vacuum now, saying, what are we saying to them, and what are we saying as a defense to them, and so on and so forth. That is why I say it's not just a confusion now. It's going over the confusion. Because sometimes they agree that they will do it. When it comes to the deadline, nothing happens. You see, at the end of the day, you have a vacuum, you have a space where it's not started. Because other one says, I'm coming to stop here. And other one is not taking over. Because it doesn't have a human resource or whatever, no capacity to do so. That's why it's over the vacuum now. There's a possibility that there are people who are really not doing the job properly and correctly. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you.
You see, though, if you listen to what Honorable Dodo was saying, then the Minister of Police, the new one, issued a statement and said, no, we'll bring the defense to come and help and what. Now, because there was a policy made in the past, now all of us are suddenly saying, which one is the correct one now, you see? So we're entering that area now of saying that now as Parliament, as an institution, can somebody talk to us from the executive to say exactly, have you abandoned what was said to us in the third Parliament?
Yes.
If you have abandoned that, what are you doing? So that we also know what we are monitoring versus the borderline. So that's why he comes as a proper and put it proper. That it's an area of confusion, and we need some clarity about it. And we need to clarify ourselves about it also, that who is saying what. Because, as Ayanna correctly says, the Constitution says the President deploys. And after the President has done all this, now when a minister starts deploying, you get a little bit worried. Yeah. So that's why that question, if you see it, it is really confusion. It expresses the point of view of different members of how we looked into the problem. Because we would like to see that the defense go to the borderline, but we don't want to say it to them when we don't know what the executive is saying.
Yeah.
We don't want to send many signals. Because the last time we have spoken to this policy matter was being suggested that the executive have decided that the defense must stay away from the borders and focus on peacekeeping. But South Africans are more concerned. We did, remember we visited all the borders and those reports. We have got different views about that one. And Ayanna brings in the most critical area, the BCMA. You see, the BCMA is a private company. Now, people, all these institutions, you talk about revenue and what, they put money into that company. And sometimes when you get there, you'll find SAS running up and down there, being the main, police in the border. You're like asking, SAS mandate, according to our own constitution, is to collect revenue. What does SAS have to do with borderline and border patrol? You then get, you can see the confusion. So is it now, you are taking that responsibility, you give it to a private company. Now what Roger says, Let's bring back that debate. Let's have a debate. Let's have a clear thinking about this particular issue and give proper guidance to our own institutions, rather than sending our own institutions into the areas of confusion, you see. Because the police, they need that money. But for years they've been promising us here in the institution, we will have capacity by 2008. And we will train and what. But we kept on saying as parliament, we don't think we'll ever be able to do that borderline. It's too far. It's vast. And we don't have the capacity. I mean, their vehicles are not even matching what is going to what is happening next to the border. And for this, that's why you will find this type of condition where even in the fences, there's lines, people just walk over every day. And I mean, syndicates find it very easy. So that's the biggest challenge we have. That's why we can't take it off our focus. We have to focus on that area and improve it and give proper direction as parliament that where does it belong. And as of now, I know even if you could put pressure on the defense force, they would be saying that no, the executive said to us, let's stay away. So parliament would have to intervene at this particular moment to assist with proper direction. So that's why that debate is like that, Babu.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll put it here and work on the recommendations of what the gentleman says. Can we clear the confusion now at this particular moment? This is the first parliament. A lot of expectations. That empire, can I go back to you?
Thank you, sir. Yeah, page 3, 2.4, bullet 2, where they talk about, among other things, rural development strategy, etc. I vividly remember that Secretary of Defense even went further to say that the Defense Force is dispensing some pieces of land to land-hungry communities. I think a matter like this, Honorable Chair, should come in facts and figures. And I think you did mention it the other day that if we had something in black and white, it would help us. It would help us if we know the size of land owned by the Defense Force, the size of land which is indispensable to the operations of the Defense Force, and the size of land that is not so dispensable, that is disposable, that can be done away with so that the government is helped, you know, to implement its rural development. Because there is a feeling outside there that the Defense Force seem to own a land bigger than its needs. So I think in future it should come, you know, in facts and figures, because figures never lie. Never mind that liars can figure out. Thank you.
No, I think that's a very good point I'm making. We're putting it in as a recommendation, because we think we need to tackle this matter. And I mean, I can't be so much eloquent than you in the manner you have come across. And I really think we need to do this. It's vulnerable, you know. I know that the Trans-Sky Defense, Sky Defense, all these small other defenses, and the defense, the SAPF, in the older ones, have got a lot of land. And then we have never been able to follow up exactly. And some of their own bases that have been closed, they have not had a good closure on that particular matter. So you are applying your mind correctly. It's standing as a recommendation, and we'll be able to call for more on that particular one. Because if you are going to deal with rural development, we want to know who is where, so that sometimes there's like small battles between people about this type of land, and we need to be able to assist. If this is what the SAPF could do to assist South Africans, let it be said quite clearly, let me see it as a contribution, but let the committee be fairly informed where is this land that we're talking about. Let it not be a mere mention around the road. Let's give our lady here. I'll come back to you. Mama Mabesha.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson is a new member of parliament and a new member in this committee. Just want to check on page 3, bullet 2.3. as the chairperson is alluded that this is the fourth parliament. I'm just worried for this bullet that this includes the continued deterioration of infrastructure. I don't know whether there is no committee that is monitoring this this deterioration of infrastructure. I've got a concern of that. If the chairperson can just clarify for me what happened next.
If you deal with the defense intelligence, that building is standing like this. It's on the verge of collapsing on top of that. If you deal with the hospital in Swami, the big military hospital.
Yeah, I told them to come over.
Yeah, when you go there, that hospital is on the verge of like falling on top of you as you enter the institution. There are places where when you go into, you visit the soldiers, you find that there's food pantries. You know, people just walk, ordinary citizens, go into that the base itself and go through the fence and go to the other fence. And they commit crimes in the meantime, see some of the so close up. So you have got a lot of facilities of the people in defense that are not being taken care of. So that's where your challenge is when you deal with this matter. I mean, they must give you more facts. You can, Maggie, you'll be able to help with this one.
The problem is we all
Yes.
This is exactly an issue that we discussed, and it was also highlighted in the party review, that we asked the department to come back and give a proper overview of the state of facilities and then an in-depth plan of what they are planning to do to with the facility maintenance. So that's something we need to follow up, and I have to come and give us a briefing on it because we didn't ask them to do it.
No, what I'm saying is for the sake of the honorable member, give her the state of things. Of what? The information that you have.
We don't have the information, that's why we...
Okay, we'll ask it from the sector. Don't worry. Okay. We'll help you to get it from sector for his staff. Let them give you the state of things. But I know from my own experience, there's quite a lot of facilities that are just standing there that are not being attended to and that are deteriorating. You remember the... when we went to go and where the shooting took place. The same type of thing. What is that place?
Luwata.
Which is one of your biggest places, where the army is. Yeah. It comes practically from that type of thing because of the deterioration of your facilities. That's what you get confronted with. But that's how, when you arrive at Luwata, you could see. You see, that's why maybe Mandy saw that they're just idling, you know, they're just lying around. She would write it into her report. No, you don't write like that about soldiers. That's all them sitting around walking, wearing civilian clothes and saying, oh, these ones are idling, we're supposed to prepare for robots. Okay. We'll help you on that one, Mama. Okay. Babun Gobu, and then I'll come back to you.
Chair, I need you. This is a clarity question. It is in page 3, economic cluster D, paragraph D, by the second paragraph. What does it mean? If it is a difficulty remains, the resources of the defense, blah, blah, blah. What does it mean in a simple, straightforward English? Because I don't understand it correctly. I don't want to guess about it. What does it mean, really?
No, I think what it really means is what when we're talking about the deterioration. You know that there's no... The asset register, I don't think it's strong in the defense where your own intellectual property is known in the defense. And I've seen the parties in the report of the defense. Is that correct, Adolfo? Does it help you?
But,
oh, say something.
But
he's going to help you.
Okay, you. So I think it deals with the restructuring of AMSCO. Remember they referred to the entities. You remember there was a discussion around the Defense Evaluation and Research Institute. It is in the final review. where they want to establish a new entity. And it will basically be a combination of part of Arms Corps, CSIR, and the NEL. And then they want Arms Corps only to be there to procure armaments. But the development and the research function should go to this new entity. So I think partly it deals with that also.
Remember that one. That is involved in the first science and technology.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yes, remember it was just cut out.
It's cut it all over.
So it then doesn't mean it should be of control. It's more really more to the research itself.
We had a very serious problem with that particular one.
Yeah, Chairperson, you know where I'm getting lost? Is the second line when you say ensure improvement self-guiding. You see, that's where I'm getting lost. Those three pieces to ensure improvement of self-guiding, that's where I'm getting lost, because we you know that we complain about it, because it's there. Nobody knows where it is. And somebody says, this is the thing at the end. But if you look for it, you have to turn around, because it's all over the show. That is where I'm having a problem. If it can be restructured so that I understand what my brother is explaining now. But the sentence, it doesn't give me that sense. You understand what I'm trying to say? Please. Thanks.
No, I really understand where you are. Maybe our wording is too nice and relaxed. Maybe we can be critical of it. Well, he's going to help us. You understand now the concern that it is. So anything you're writing could just help us to put it in a manner that captures the fear. Yeah. Is there any other member? Tatundu. Tatu Tiyar.
Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I'm not going to answer what has been discussed just now. If I'm sitting here thinking very deeply, I think it's nearly 5 years now, or more. I mean, we are talking of human beings. Human beings who are protecting our lives in the country and the neighboring countries. Now, for almost 5 years, talking about deteriorating facilities, you have said, but I'm more worried as a grown-up person. I'm worried. If hospitals, if places, the armaments are old, it was reported. Armaments are old. Intelligence, military, very important organ. Facilities deteriorate. 5 years already. It's already 5 years. Talking about these things. Hospitals and other things. Very old. Whatever report comes to this portfolio, it's nothing that to say today there is improvement in certain facilities. But, you know, the language is deterioration all the time. All the time. We are saying so even now. How long are we going to do this? These people are protecting our lives. So their places of stay and all that should be improved so that they can have a moral standard to defend us. If things have cut us deliberately, that deteriorated, what do we think? We've got ties on, we drink tea. I was a freedom fighter, sleeping under the hole. You know, under the tree, eating grass. But having determination that one day freedom will come, even if I die. Even if I die. For 30 years. For 30 years. But now here are the people who are under democracy. But their facilities are, I'm sitting and thinking. I think let's take this matter very, very, very serious. Very, very. The Central School, you were with this committee how many years today? Talking about deterioration, army, intelligence, what, armaments, old. Whenever department comes here, just give us the same story. No story that there is improvement. All the documents before us. So, Mucheck, let's take the matter very seriously. And I'm talking to you, the committee. I'm talking to you. I'm a freedom fighter. I know the difficulties. You don't know the difficulties that I went through, experiences. I'm sitting, I'm quiet, listen. Thank you very much. Let's take the matter very, very serious.
Thank you. Now, with your support and with how we are going to be working, we'll be able to take up questions, every issue very serious. And we are confronted with that. That's why you see the 100 days of sins, like they are postponing our future.
Yeah.
You see. Look, so far this collective that we have here has been quite determined. It's been very consistent. I mean, they've been coming to meet us quite consistent. That's why I said you must come back. Because I really want us to wrap up this matter of how the defense is being handled and how we handle the issues that are related to the defense. But we also depend upon the officials in the department and the ministry to be able to respond to what Parliament is saying. But I mean, I've said it, that we have been saying it together, the collective here. We are not going to leave anything. We are going to be seated on this type of thing. But really, this, some of the stuff that why you hear me being, seems like I'm eloquent. It's because they've been here as for quite a long time now. Year by year, we repeat what we are saying in relation to the defense itself. But it depends on the collective. Do you have anything to say, my brother?
Thank you, Chair. Just to say as a preliminary point, I look forward to the Honourable Member's speech on Friday. It seems fired up and ready to go. I think it was a very good dry run. Let me just concretize and suggest that, the Honourable Member is absolutely correct. The question of the deterioration of infrastructure is important. It has come up in our deliberations. Can I propose that it be a separate bullet point and be included in the section under committee observation, and that it, a section about infrastructure be included in our recommendation about full briefing about the state of readiness of the defence force.
Okay. Is there any other members got anything now? I have asked Honourable Mina and Mendy, they are just going to consolidate the whole report and put up the good Englishes and the good marks and everything. But I think the content members, you have said as much as you can about what to think about each and every issue in relation to this matter. Yeah. So what is the next step, Mendy? To adopt it? Let me hear.
Chair, I wouldn't want this to be like the A400M Air Force procurement program where we pay for an aircraft that nobody's ever seen. I would prefer to see the report before we adopt it. That would be my proposal.
Okay. are members available this afternoon for us to talk to them after you've done all the improvements? Fine. The president is this afternoon.
Yeah,
I know his priority.
Yeah.
So what do we do? No, 2 o'clock the president is speaking, we have to build the house.
Yeah.
Look, let's push it for tomorrow morning. 9 o'clock, before we all go to our caucuses. We'll just come here and have it. The caucus starts at 10 o'clock.
No, my
caucus starts at 8. Let's persuade you to come and adopt the report.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's just get an adopt the report. But we just have to, you see, he's right. We have amended this statement now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have put in quite a lot of things. And I don't want it to be seen as a document of so-and-so without your knowledge. You need to owe it. It's your own document. It's your own views. You would want to see the issues of land quite eloquently written up than in a small clause somewhere else. Let's meet here tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow?
Yes. She'll give us everything. She'll circulate it. She'll inform you on time. Everything will be properly organized. Thank you, honorable member. That was the only issue that brought us together. What is it? Most honorable member, you want to say something?
No, I'm sorry, thank you. As long as we get a copy circulated
before we end today. That's why I'll give Mendy and Mr. Hema to really work on it.
Right.
The whole, and by the end of the day today, you'll have your own copies. And then you look at the copy and you see structural and everything, if it's correct, then you can just come and adopt it tomorrow in preparation for our budget vote on Friday. I hope members are quite ready now and comfortable. But with the level of contributions, I can see you know what to do, man. You don't sound like new members of parliament. Seems as if you've been here for quite some time.
Have
that, but thanks a lot, honorable. Mm-hmm.
Love that.
Why? We are finished. It's got up to trash.
No?
What do you want us to say?
Thank you, member. Peter, I'm putting something in.